Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 35 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast.
And in this episode, I talked to Farley Elliott. He is a senior editor for Eater Los Angeles. He's also a published author. He has a book called Los Angeles Street Food, A History from Tamaleros to Taco Trucks. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. You should definitely check it out. It's extremely comprehensive and well-written, and I think you could use it. It's a very useful tool. We talk about how he got started in the food writing business. We talk about how when he originally came to Los Angeles, he was a comedy writer doing sketch comedy writing for writing with UCB and others, and then how he graduated to writing primarily about his passion, which was food, and visiting an enormous amount of Taco Bell. It's a really interesting story. And then, of course, we do delve into the California barbecue scene in Los Angeles specifically. We talk about Moo's Craft Barbecue. We talk about Ray's Barbecue in Huntington Park. We talk about Trudy's Underground Barbecue. We talk about Ragtop Fern and the gamut. And we talk about what Los Angeles barbecue was like in 10, 15, 20 years ago when he first started out and first came to Los Angeles, and how it's evolved and changed to be a kind of a different animal, and having all these underground pop-ups and what that means to Los Angeles and kind of going forward what that means.
And if you're digging these, please subscribe. I'll be adding at least 2 to 3 of these per week. Check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. Hit me up at my website, kevinsbbqjoints.com. Let me know if there's anybody else you'd love to see, any places you'd like me to visit. Thanks so much. Enjoy this. Good morning, Farley. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing quite well.
Good.
So what does your day look like today? I'm curious as to what a usual day for the senior editor for Eater Los Angeles is.
You know, every day is a little different. Every day is a little bit the same. I get up pretty early, so 5:30, 6 o'clock, I'm out of bed. I tend to hit the ground running. With the eating schedule that I have, I almost never eat breakfast. So I'm just, if anything, I maybe do a cup of coffee at home, usually just water, and then I'm at the desk kind of putting work together for the day. And that's a few different things. Some of that is prep stories that I know I just need to get out into the world. I do, you know, 5-6 stories a day usually. And then a lot of it is also just kind of scheduling and setting up my day in advance so that I can go out and kind of achieve what I need to achieve at the timetable that I set for myself.
Gotcha. And then you're also probably fielding a lot of emails from restaurants, PR, right?
The whole exactly. Thing. Yeah. Yeah. I probably get about, just in that world, I get about 200 emails a day. I came up as a freelancer writing anywhere I could for a long time. And I still have a little bit of that mentality of just trying to be the nicest guy in the room, because that's how you get ahead. I still try to answer every email. I still try to take as much time as I can. But it's a never ending deluge over here at Eater, that's for sure. But that's good too, right? It means people want to talk to me. It means that we're doing something right. So I take that as an act of kindness on their part.
Yeah, that engagement is important. And it does mean that you're doing something right. How did you start in this? Were you a writer prior to this for a magazine or for an online magazine?
Yeah, not really. I sort of started in a very non-traditional way. I moved to Los Angeles doing comedy stuff. So comedy writing, improvised like live comedy and that sort of stuff. That was what I had done a lot in college. I was a theater major and had a few years of doing that in LA and really enjoyed it. Started making a little bit of money at it. Never really acting, just like that sort of behind the scenes grind that people do before they get on SNL or something like that. Sure. And eventually what I found when I sort of took a big picture view was – like the thing that I was having the most fun doing wasn't going to these shows or staying out late with my friends and trying to write a new script. It was talking to my friends about the places that I was eating. Dead broke in LA. I had a motorcycle at the time and I would go to my day job and then I would go and do comedy stuff all night. And then I would drive to a new taco place every night, just because where I grew up in upstate New York, tacos don't exist. So the idea that I could eat this stuff on the cheap as a final meal before going to bed and getting up and doing it all again seemed fascinating to me. And that was really sort of what carried me through when I realized this is what I should maybe start spending my time on.
And so that was like the Upright Citizens Brigade or...
That's exactly right. Yeah, I was on a house team at the Upright Citizens Brigade for years. So almost all of my friends are UCB people. Okay. I met my wife doing comedy. I mean, it's still very much in my lifeblood, but it's a little bit outside of the realm of what I actually want to be doing. And honestly, I think it's very nice now. I went to a wedding last weekend of a couple of comedy friends, and, you know, everybody who is in the food world and sees my comedy friends, some of whom are on TV or in movies, they go, oh, wow, that's so cool. You know, these people are really great or really funny. They have a really great job. All of my comedy friends are like, man, you got the best job.
they all love food. They all love food.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I get to have a little bit of both ways, which is really nice.
Oh, that's very cool. So you came from upstate New York. Did your family come out here or did you come out here for school or?
Well, I'm the first person in my family to move away, first person in my family to go to college. I had a little bit of a sort of non-traditional background, just moving around a lot when I was a kid. Ended up settling with my dad and a stepmother in upstate New York, where I was originally from. My father and that whole side of the family runs a lumberjacking business. Like, they just sort of climb trees and cut down trees and do the whole thing. And it's my last name is Elliot. It's Elliot and Sons. It's like my father, my older brother, my younger brother now. It's a real family affair.
Wow, that's very cool.
And I just was like, well, I'm gonna go try to write an act, I guess.
Was it one of those things where like he's leaving the family?
You know, it took years when I was leaving to come to California to I did 2 years at a small state school in New York and then moved out here to finish going to school at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. When I was doing that, my dad sort of pulled me aside right before I left and said, you know, you should maybe get your commercial driver's license, like just in case, you know. And it's not bad advice.
That's not bad advice at all.
It's just not advice I was ever going to take. Mm-hmm. And it took really – I wrote a book about a year and a half ago called Los Angeles Street Food. It's a history of street food from sort of the 1860s to today. And that book is a physical thing that has my name on it. And when I was able to hand that to my dad, I think it was a lot more of an understanding that, you know, I'm not asking for rent money and maybe things are going to be okay.
And it's proof. It's physical proof that what you're doing makes sense.
Exactly. That somebody believed in it enough to send it to a printer at least.
And I want to talk a little bit about that too, because I want to get into barbecue in Los Angeles, and we could probably talk for 3 hours on Los Angeles food and the growing trends. But
yeah.
So you went to Cal Poly, and the food scene there is different than Los Angeles. But it's a special place up there with the Rio Grande and Pismo and.
For sure, yeah. You're sort of right in the heart of that wine country. So you get a lot of weekend tourists who are up to drink. You get a lot of higher-end restaurants on vineyards or near vineyards that sort of cater to that crowd. I went to school there and was like, man, you guys have two Denny's? This is unbelievable. My town in upstate New York is about 400, 600 people. It's a one-stop light zero.
Wow.
So it was a big jump for me. And to be honest with you, I think if I had moved from New York to LA straight away, I don't think I would have stayed. It would have been too large a scale.
That's true.
But doing the Central Coast, having the opportunity from there to go to San Francisco, go to farms, go to ranches, all of that kind of really localized stuff that is just the way that people eat on the Central Coast, I think really changed me for the better as a person who spends his time eating and writing about food now.
No, that's a great background to have.
Yeah.
And then from there, did you come to Los Angeles for the comedy, for the writing, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. So I moved down with a bunch of my friends from college. We all sort of lived together, that sort of early LA hodgepodge life, taking classes at UCB, working a day job. I used to work at this company called Oliver Peoples. It's like a high-end eyewear.
Yeah,
I worked in their headquarters and just sort of had a desk job. And everybody knew that I was going to be a writer, that I was going to leave. Nobody cared. You know, it just was really great. I still have a lot of friends there. And eventually I was able to kind of piece together some random ways to make a little bit of money on the side. I started writing for LAist. From there, I started writing for Serious Eats, which is based out of New York. Mm-hmm. They used to have a little bit of a different model than they do now. Now they're almost all recipes. But at the time, they had a kind of lifestyle-ish section where they do, you know, restaurant reviews and things like that. And I started writing weekly taco reviews for them for about the first 2.5 years because I had gone to so many places. My first year in LA, I went to about 125 taco places.
And one every 3 days or so.
Yeah, because I was so enamored with this idea. And you know, I'm a type A personality enough so that when I go to one, I go, that's interesting. When I go to two, I have a comparison point. When I go to three, we're starting to build a trend model. Mm-hmm. And pretty quickly, I had a little Google map and I would put points on it of places I'd gone, what I thought the name was, what I thought the food was. Mm-hmm. And I just started sending that around to my friends who would ask me for recommendations. That got into some other people's hands. And eventually I was able to land a job, you know, no money, but enough of a weekly platform to put something together with Serious Eats that what they did pay me basically went into food and then me sweating over a laptop at 11 o'clock at night.
Did you have a blog or was it all just Serious Eats?
No, yeah, I never had like my own blog really. I started at Alayist, which was like literally no money, and was doing some kind of movie reviews and random things like that, just sort of anything I could do to get my foot in the door. And eventually, somebody who was close to me at Alayist was like, "Hey, you know, we're not getting paid for this. Why don't you at least write about the stuff you want to be writing about?" And I
That's
was like, "Oh
true.
yeah." And so I sort of came to them and said, "Hey, I've got some of this food stuff I've been collecting." They said, "Oh, that's great." So I started writing a little bit of food things for them. Serious Eats was able to pick up on who I was from that. I started getting paid from Serious Eats. And then once you're able to kind of start building that ball, it rolls downhill, I think in some cases pretty quickly. I was very fortunate to be coming up at the time that street food was becoming much more popular. This is early Kogi barbecue, so I think I was able to have a voice in a scene that was really growing
And
really rapidly.
it was fascinating at the time when it was first starting. Everyone clamored to go to any place that had the food trucks. The food trucks were huge, and they
Absolutely.
still are, but it's a different animal now.
Yes, yeah. And early Kogi barbecue, people didn't have Twitter. Twitter was out there, but it wasn't very popular.
True.
People would download Twitter just to get to Kogi barbecue, and they would kind of follow along. And Kogi would say, "Okay, we're going to be at like 8th and Grand or whatever." And people would not know which corner that meant. And so everybody would show up, and you would have four different corners staked out, with each with 50 people on it.
That's
And then truck
insane.
would. Yeah, the truck would roll up, figure out where they're going to park on which corner, and everybody would just mob. Jaywalk, like run across the street, hop in line. It was like crazy, crazy, crazy.
And that's really cool. And that says a lot for Roy Choi, is that he created something that has evolved nationwide, but it was something that, and then the taco trucks, because I'm sure when you first came to Los Angeles, there were taco trucks all over the place, but it wasn't what it is now.
No, yeah, it's and you're talking about sort of two different things. The idea of the lunch catering truck, the
True.
Lonchero, that sort of stuff is decades, decades old.
Oh
And
yeah.
in my book, a little bit, we talk about this idea that the first street food vendors in Los Angeles have basically been here since day one, is the tamale guys who would push around carts selling tamales. There used to be these travel logs of people who would come to Los Angeles and were convinced that somehow every restaurant in LA was completely outdoors, because all they would see were these tamale guys. Every other indoor restaurant just couldn't get business, you know? And in a lot of ways, obviously, that's sort of in our blood as Angelenos, but the gourmet modern food truck movement—it really is the Roy Choi-ification of what this city has become. And now, as you said, it's nationwide and even international.
Yeah, no, I'll put a link to your book, and I do need to do myself a service and actually buy your book, because it sounds fast. No, it sounds fascinating, and it's hard to navigate that all the different taco places, because there's so many, and then a lot of times, and it's not that there's good and bad. There are good and bad, but it's kind of like it's there's certain ones that rise to the top that.
100%. You know, there's 50,000 street food vendors roughly in the county of Los Angeles. I've been to
Wow.
maybe 650. So, as many as I've done, you're not scratching the surface.
So then how did you so did Eater come to you, or did you apply with Eater, or how did that work? Because was Eater Los Angeles, was it even did it even exist when you were at Serious Eats already?
Eater started here in LA, I guess it's got to be around a decade ago. Leslie Ballo, who does The Gat now and a few other things, Angeleno Magazine, she was the first editor. And then we had a few different people along the way. It sort of stabilized with Cat O'Dell for a few years.
Oh yeah.
And I was running a sort of parallel life. So I was doing Serious Eats, starting to make a little bit of money in random ways, doing copy editing jobs, things like that. From Serious Eats, I was able to parlay that into some work with places like Thrillist, LA Magazine, LA Weekly, I started writing for quite a bit. And then once you start playing at that level, at least locally for a city like Los Angeles, it's pretty easy to get yourself known. So I used to, you know, you've been around this world long enough, you know, sometimes PR people find you, and then it's their job to find you. And they want to talk to you and be like, "Hey, let's go meet at this restaurant and we'll talk and I'll pay for your meal," and all that sort of stuff. And you know, you're so broke and you're just trying to figure out a way to like stay and survive, that I'd go on these meals with these PR people and I could always feel like I knew I was doing a better and better job, or having a higher and higher profile, depending on the restaurant that people wanted to take me to.
That's pretty funny.
I'd meet at a Carl's Jr. and then I'd meet somewhere else.
So, did you try to stake your claim like within a certain type of restaurant when you were? Because I know you have the street food and you have the tacos, but I'm sure they sent you everywhere, because Los Angeles is huge. And then if it went down to Long Beach and Orange County and all the way up to Pismo, that's.
So for me, I'm a firm believer, and I tell anybody who wants to talk to me about being a young writer and trying to make it, my thing, the way that I feel like I got through, was to find a thing that you think you really care about and do that thing better than anybody else. So when people start looking for someone to fill that hole, hey, who's the taco guy?
Yeah.
They're going to come to me. Or more accurately, they're going to come to Bill Esparza because he's sort of the best guy to ever be talking about tacos in Los Angeles. But if you want a different voice, I always try to approach it from like, hey, I'm not from here. I don't have this culture. Let's go learn together. If that's what you're looking for, I'm the guy for that.
Gotcha.
I started writing a lot about craft beer early on, burgers, just sort of things that were already in my wheelhouse that I felt like I could have a somewhat authoritative voice on. And that really made it so that people were able to find me and use me as a resource.
And then when were you full time with Eater? 3, 4 years?
So yeah, so I started freelancing a little bit with Eater right towards the end of my run of doing freelance stuff all over town. And then I got my book deal, and I knew that that was sort of on the horizon of something that I would have to write. And it was going to take a lot of time away, just sort of pure volume of time, from being able to go and be a freelancer and pick up those random odd jobs. So Eater reached out to me. I had started transitioning a little bit from just telling one-off stories to maybe breaking news or being a part of the daily restaurant scene in LA. So they approached me and said, hey, would you want to, you know, figure out a way to come in-house and start doing that stuff under the Eater umbrella? And I was very, very thankful to say yes. Keep me from sweating out how to make a paycheck while also writing a book for no money.
Did you do a food book tour at all?
I did, yeah. I mean, it was pretty localized. I mean, the book is about Los Angeles.
Exactly.
So, you like know,
book
I
soup,
went as far
maybe.
As yeah, yeah, exactly. You do the run of all the local bookstores. I did a bunch of libraries, you know, interviews, Skype, things like this, all that sort of stuff. So it's been a year, year and a half now. The book sort of is what it is, and I think that's really great. You know, we talked a little bit before this started about the world of the internet and some of the comments that you hear and things like that. And one of the first Amazon reviews I ever got for my book was a woman who was essentially saying like, well, how can you even collect all this information? It's going to change over time. And I'm like, yeah, that's the beauty.
That's the
of
point.
It.
That's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. It's funny. It's funny how people tend to sometimes look at the negative, or it's a strange world out there with the internet. But it's also, it does help because then you can kind of like filter what's coming in, and you can see where you need to improve or need to check out a certain angle, or you know.
And that's exactly right. And I've gotten some of my best heads up about things that are happening in the restaurant scene in Los Angeles from anonymous people on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also heard some of the worst things said to me that are like at all possible to come out of anybody's mouth. I think the internet is very, very good at finding people who really have a strong love for a niche. And in my case, it's the LA restaurant scene. And because those people are so embedded and so indebted to that scene, they tend to believe that their way is the right way. And sometimes they're accurate. And more often than not, we just sort of agree to disagree.
And people are pretty passionate about food, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Your case in point.
Yeah,
so am I.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking if that weren't the case. But no, we're in such a different space now culturally in America than we were a decade ago even. And within Los Angeles, the restaurant scene is so fantastically dynamic compared to where it was a decade ago that I don't think you could live here and not have an opinion about the restaurant scene.
That's
really.
That's very true. Well, I'd like to jump into barbecue in Los Angeles. What was your impression of barbecue when you first started working with Eater, and how has it kind of evolved?
So the first place I ever lived in LA was off Slauson, right down at the kind of edge of Culver City, almost by LAX. And so I would spend a lot of time taking that east-west route to get around town, but all the way through South LA, eating at places like, you know, Phillips, kind of old school South LA.
Let's go say Phillips, yeah.
Yeah, a barbecue institutions, you know, and a lot of them end up being this sort of vaguely Southern pan-regional barbecue style that is good, has a lot of sauce on it.
Very saucy.
Stuff that's, yes, very, very saucy. Always fascinated at the intersection of like food and culture, and that black migration out of the South in the 1940s brought barbecue to Los Angeles is like an endlessly amazing story to me. But it was never the barbecue that I thought was really representative of a great standalone version compared to what Austin or, you know, Kansas City has. So it really took, I think, a lot of people coming to the city, seeing what was missing and starting to fill in that void.
And probably people traveling to all these other cities, having the opportunity, or maybe seeing things on the internet and saying, when I go to South by Southwest, I need to try barbecue.
Right. And that's exactly right. Austin became known so much as a barbecue city, or at least barbecue adjacent. From there, you can do drives to Tyler and everything else. Like, people started coming back to LA, realizing there was a void, filling it in their own backyards. And now we get to what you have today, which is people who have done those sort of barbecue pilgrimages, and they're back in their yards with these hundreds of gallons large smokers. And they're selling this stuff on Instagram or Twitter because they're making a product that, frankly, is better than most restaurants are able to put out.
So with Los Angeles, obviously, you cannot have an offset smoker in a restaurant. How do you think a year from now, how do you think this is going to evolve? What's going to happen with, I know it's exciting with all these guys doing it in their backyard, but what's going to happen? What do you think? Is that something maybe we can get changed, or is that just LA?
LA is really tough. The state of California is really tough. If you're a guy doing, you know, big open pit tri-tip in Santa Maria somewhere, nobody's going to bother you. You're in a parking lot. But to be in a dense city like Los Angeles, with all the smog that we already have, with all of the, you know, from a civic level down, ways to keep businesses from being able to smoke meat the way that is traditionally done in places like Texas, that's not going to change, to be perfectly honest with you. I would be very, very surprised if it does. And so what you have in the meantime is a bunch of enterprising people who, as we said, are cooking in their backyard and things like that. It's always going to be interesting. It's also always going to be basically illegal unless you get people you know, sometimes you'll have people who cook offsite at a commissary kitchen and then bring their finished version of a product to sell somewhere. But even that, at the commissary kitchen, they're not cooking in an offsite.
No, they won't be allowed to,
Right, exactly. And so there's always going to be that fine balance, in the same way that we've had a fine balance with all of legal and illegal street food in LA. So unfortunately, there's going to be people who just have to keep working underground because there's no other alternative to smoke the way they want to smoke.
Yeah, because I've read from your articles, Mr. Fry's guy, and there was another guy that had, now they have brick and mortar locations, or?
Yeah, All Flavor No Grease and stuff.
All Flavor No Grease, yeah.
He's got a food truck now. Mr. Fry's man has an actual physical location down in Gardena. And somebody like Ragtop Ferns, who's cooking out of a box smoker, it's not an offset, he's got an opportunity, not that he ever wants to do this, but he could move into a restaurant pretty seamlessly. But somebody like Bert Batman at Trudy's Barbecue, a guy who really, really has the heart and soul of what Texas-style barbecue is, even though he's a, you know, 40s Israeli guy who,
a real estate guy.
He's a real estate guy, trained in, like, knows every nightlife promoter in the city somehow. Like, that guy is very well connected.
Yes.
He is actually moving into a restaurant space as part of a larger conjunction with a big nightlife group. The restaurant's going to be called Slab on West 3rd Street here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I'm excited to see what Bird is able to do with the equipment that is given to him. But he knows as well as anybody that it is not the same as cooking on a gigantic open offset smoker.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty. I worked way back when. I managed Smoke City Market over on Van Nuys and Magnolia, and at the beginning things were great, and it was, I think a lot of it had to do with the meat quality. The meat quality was really high, but we were working on an old hickory pit, and those things, it takes a certain kind of nuance to be able to cook properly. And I think the J&R smokers, those seem to work really well too. It's they're more of the big large box smokers.
You know, I think I'm trying to think back to who were like the first barbecue people that I pointed to and was like, oh, you guys are able to do something in a restaurant setting that works. Like, maybe it was even early days Barrel and Ashes. But I think a lot
of the first incarnation, maybe.
And I do think, for better or worse, that first incarnation was the most important for them because it opened up a lot of people's eyes as to what could be hypothetically possible. But, you know, looking back on it now, Barrel and Ashes is just frankly not a restaurant I spend a lot of time at. I can go to somebody's backyard and get a better quality product because they care and they're there. And that's really what matters when it comes to barbecue.
And it's sad. I thought that they had a lot of potential, and I think that that's more, they're more of, in my mind, a restaurant as a restaurant slash bar and a craft bar, like, as opposed to a barbecue joint.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a bummer for all involved. But it also, the way you got to think about it is that Los Angeles is a city that is not ever going to be defined by just one thing.
For sure.
You know, we're 20% white. We're the second largest Latino population outside of Mexico City. That's also true for, you know, Thai, for Filipino,
Korean.
For, Yeah, Koreans, like a lot of Chinese, a million Chinese people who live 15 minutes east of me, you know? And so the idea that we are ever going to be like Austin, a city that is primarily known for barbecue, this is not going to be the case. So people who might naturally have otherwise in a city this large gravitated to barbecue, push that scene forward, are going to Sungnongdan in Koreatown and just eating big braised short ribs out of a stone pot instead and getting a version of that meaty sort of satisfaction they want anyway.
So what's going so essentially what you're saying is we'll have a California barbecue scene, but it's never going to be quite like Austin or places in Texas quite like it because it doesn't make sense for what
right,
we have.
Right, and you know, the city of Los Angeles is very adamant. The county of Los Angeles is very adamant about street food's place in LA and keeping it sort of marginalized. You know, there's a framework now to make it decriminalized, but it's certainly not legal. And there's no path forward right now to make street food legal.
Oh, interesting.
So you have people like a Bert in Studio City who can get away for a while as long as his neighbors don't mind the smoke, cooking, selling on Instagram. It's all illegal, but it's also all pretty fine. Mm-hmm. When the city decides to change on that stance, and that could be happening literally as we speak right now, the scene will move and change and become dynamic in a way that we haven't seen yet. The idea that we are going to become a restaurant scene for barbecue, I just don't think is really possible.
That's true. And we have some new up and comers. We have Republic, we have Ray's, who has been around a long time. And
yep.
I don't know if you visited Ray's recently, but he's putting out a lot. His quality is quite amazing right now. He has some J&R smokers. He's putting out beef ribs, which is nice. And then you have Pearls, which I'm curious as to what that's going to be.
You know, to be honest with you, Pearls is the one that I'm the most curious about because they've invested a lot of money in a big offset that they bring to some events and things like that. And they're sort of in this funky little corner of the arts district. And, you know, I'm sure the health department is going to have to come and sign off on some things. But I have a hard time believing that air quality issues won't affect their restaurant business model very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's going to be interesting come November once they have that interesting grand opening thing that. Hopefully, we can meet up there and talk in person.
But you know, there's also La Barbecue is supposed to be coming.
Yeah, and I'm curious, how is that going to work?
The answer is I truly don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a lot of talk early on about them landing at Smorgasburg, which would be that Sunday kind of open air market at the Row. You know, if that's the case, it's encased inside of a large restaurant property that has, you know, mixed use developments happening on every single corner. Maybe they can get away with it, quote unquote, for a while.
Yeah.
For La Barbecue to move into an actual physical restaurant, they're going to have to drastically change the way they cook compared to Austin. And I'm not sure they're going to want to do that.
Yeah, and I'm hearing inklings that they're not going to want to change that, but you know, who knows? Who knows? Maybe that's something that I think that if anybody can do it, they can do it.
Yeah, and you know, this brings up an interesting side point. You know, there's not a lot of people in the general zeitgeist who are standing up for the local taco guy. We're standing up for the local fruit vendor because they seem to be ubiquitous and they're already not like hurting anybody and they keep a low profile. There may be a chance that La Barbecue, that Pearls, that a lot of these other places build a sort of community voice that they can take to City Hall to find a way to make offset smoking a real possibility in the city of Los Angeles. And that would be really, really fantastic. But it's going to take a lot of people with a lot of money and a lot of time on their hands.
And it's going to take like a certain local politician that gets behind it and pushes it. And maybe that's what it takes, but it is a shame that that's not happening for the local street vendors too, because they don't have the voice but it'll be interesting. Maybe there'll be a certain pocket or there'll be a certain place that it's okay to have an offset smoker at. I'm not sure.
Absolutely. You know, and as we all become more attuned to the idea that different neighborhoods offer different things to different people around LA, you could put a sort of barbecue zone in the valley, in South LA, you know, east of downtown, anything like that. And I think a lot of people would come and be really supportive.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's actually, like a little barbecue green zone that they create that could have, like, you know, maybe have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, have breakfast, like have it so that maybe there's, because you know how they have the trailer parks in Austin, maybe there could be something like that. And I know, have you been to the, it's a quick aside, have you been to the trailer park in Long Beach?
The new container park?
Yeah, container park, yeah.
You know, I have not been myself. That seems like a decently interesting model for kind of what we're talking about. You know, if you – it's the same thing with Grand Central Market in downtown Los Angeles. If you have people that are able to get in with a low overhead, which means they can spend more time honing their craft and ideas, you're going to get a lot of interesting results. And if there were – and this is all hypothetical. It's not like we have any ins with the city. If there were a green zone of sorts for the county of Los Angeles, even if it's up in Santa Clarita, then you would have people who are able to, at a low entry point, innovate on the finished product, which is a good thing for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, people, if I were to drive being in the San Fernando Valley to get Korean barbecue, it would take me an hour and a half or 2 hours, generally, most times of the day. And so I would drive 2 hours to Santa Clarita if I knew that there were six, seven different places or even three places.
Yeah, 100%.
Perhaps that's...
And maybe there's something interesting where... a different county, a different city takes up that mantle instead. You know, I don't know how often, but I would say relatively often I would be willing to drive to a San Bernardino to go and eat great barbecue if I knew that it was out there and waiting for me at large scale.
So maybe this is the beginning right here. This is a start. This is the start of that movement.
We're both turning into hometown barbecue mayors.
Exactly. I don't mind it. Not that I have a lot of free time, but maybe it would be a worthwhile cause. That's for sure.
Right.
Well, so I wanted to kind of wrap this up as to barbecue wise. Is there any place that's on your radar that's popping up, or we've already discussed those, or places that say you're going tonight to get barbecue? Where would you go?
Yeah, I mean, if it had to be a sit-down restaurant, you know, it's probably like a Phillips or something like that in South LA that offers a little bit of nostalgia. I think for me, I'm probably more likely to do a restaurant that offers kind of like open fire cooking of animal meats, a place like Chispaca or Rosso Blue in downtown, something like that, instead of skewing straight barbecue. But for anybody out there who's got a little bit of time to track this stuff down and go find it on their own, I think Moose Craft Barbecue in East LA is doing really fantastic stuff. I do think Trudy's is kind of the Trudy's Underground Barbecue on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the real bar setter for LA, what Texas style barbecue can be. And I know that he's got some more kind of public facing events that are coming up for people to be able to get in who maybe haven't been able to come off the wait list in his Instagram DMs and try it for themselves.
Yeah, that is definitely, I get that question a lot. A lot of people write me and say, how do you contact Bert? And it's, I just tell him, go to Instagram, follow him and DM him and request an order. He'll get to you. And it takes tenacity. I think he wants that kind of tenacity. He wants people that are passionate about barbecue to.
Exactly. Yeah. And the truth is, you know, I have people every day who are like, what's the address for Moose Craft Barbecue? What's the address for Trudy's? And I'm like, these are literally people's homes. Mm-hmm. I cannot just, you know,
can't provide that information.
Not my place.
And the first time, to be honest, the first time I was talking to Bert, I was two blocks away and I said, I am over here. And he said, come over. And like, so even at that point, I didn't totally have a physical address. I just had an area. So
right. And the last time I was at Bert's a couple of weeks ago, there was a young Thai couple that had literally gotten off a plane at LAX and driven straight there. And it happened to be at a time when Bert was smoking pastrami style beef ribs. And so you had these people who had never had American barbecue before. So we had to sort of explain to them what the illegal underground food scene is in Los Angeles, and then American style barbecue, and then what the pastramification of American style barbecue is. It was wild. But they were there because they've been following me for a year and couldn't be happier to come and experience that version of America. I love that.
Yeah, and I love that that exists. And I love the scavenger hunt aspect of that because, and I'm sure like for you too, it's when you find a new place that's exciting, you get excited.
Absolutely. And my job, thankfully, is for the most part to get to go and tell people about those things as soon as they happen. And so I get to be, gatekeeper is maybe too egotistical of a word, but a guy who can help shepherd folks into really awesome, really great experiences. You know, you look at All Flavor No Grease in South LA, it's 125,000 Instagram followers. Now, Kevin Durant shows up to eat that guy's food. That's all I want is to connect that guy with the Kevin Durants of the world who don't even know they need it in their lives.
Oh, for sure. Well, that is fascinating. I think that's a great way to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Farley, for taking the time, and hopefully we'll connect. We'll meet up somewhere at a barbecue place or a taco place or somewhere in between, or maybe a Korean barbecue or
whatever's 2 hours away. That's what we got.
Exactly. Well, have a great day today, and I'll make sure I put links to everything that you have going on and your book and all that. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye. Bye.